Welcome to the deep dive, where we cut through the noise to get straight to the most important nuggets of knowledge.
Glad to be here.
Today, we're tackling a really substantial document, Uzbekistan's fiscal strategy for 2026-2028. This comes straight from their Ministry of Economy and Finance.
That's right. A key piece of planning.
And our mission, really, is to act as your expert guides. We want to transform this pretty complex strategy into a clear, forward-looking investor outlook report. We're focusing specifically on what this whole plan means for you, the potential international investor.
Precisely. Our goal is to assess if this strategy genuinely signals, you know, stable and predictable environment, the kind of place foreign investment looks for. And we're sticking purely to the information inside this document, looking for the what, and maybe more importantly, the why it matters for your decisions.
Okay, let's kick things off then with the executive investment summary. When you boil it all down, what's the top-level message? The direction, and I guess the big question, does it immediately give off those vibes of stability and predictability that foreign capital really needs?
Well, at its core, the strategy for 2026-2028 is really about two main things: ensuring medium-term fiscal stability and driving sustained economic growth. There's a very clear, I'd say ambitious, goal stated: transforming Uzbekistan into an above-average income country by 2030.
That's quite a statement. Do they back that up?
They do, yeah. It's not just talk. They've put specific targets on it, aiming for a GDP over $200 billion and getting per capita income past $5,000. Now, for you, the investor, this signals a government that seems genuinely committed to creating that stable, predictable landscape. And it's not just aspirations. It's backed by clear macroeconomic and fiscal targets. We're talking maintaining annual GDP growth of at least 6%.
Okay, 6% minimum.
Right. And a really strong focus on inflation, targeting 5% by 2027, plus holding the consolidated budget deficit below 3% of GDP. That's a key one.
A hard ceiling?
Seems like it. And keeping public debt under 50% of GDP. These aren't just numbers floating around. They're presented as the guardrails.
Yeah. You know,
designed to de-risk the economy and provide that certainty.
Those are definitely some solid sounding guardrails. But let's dig into the specifics a bit more. What are the actual macroeconomic forecasts for the next 3 years? And how serious do they sound about the fiscal discipline needed to hit those numbers? It's fascinating how they plan to achieve this stability, especially with, well, everything going on globally.
Okay, looking at their own national projections within the strategy, they're forecasting pretty robust real GDP growth. Think 6.1% in 2026, then nudging up to 6.3% in 2027, and then settling back slightly to 6.1% in 2028. So sustained growth. This is projected to lift GDP per capita quite significantly from around $3,400 expected in 2025 up to over $4,350 by 2028.
That's a noticeable jump. And inflation.
Inflation, yeah. Measured by the CPI, they're targeting 6-7% in 2026, then easing to 5-6% in 2027, and ultimately hitting that 5% target in 2028. Getting inflation down to that 5% level is really key, I think. It signals a serious commitment to price stability, which, as you know, is music to investors' ears.
Absolutely. So what about that fiscal discipline side, that 3% deficit ceiling you mentioned?
Right. On fiscal discipline, they're being very clear. A consolidated budget deficit ceiling of 3% of GDP for the whole 2026-2028 period. They're framing it as a crucial fiscal rule, not just a target. That signals a strong commitment, potentially.
And the debt.
Public debt is targeted not to exceed 50% of GDP. They even mentioned specific measures to cap new external debt deals for 2026 within certain limits. For an investor, that 50% cap provides a pretty substantial buffer against future shocks. It helps mitigate sovereign risk. And to finance any deficit they might run, even within that 3%, the strategy talks about diversified sources, external debt, internal debt, privatization money, and getting budget loans repaid. So not putting all our eggs in one basket.
That 3% target is definitely a strong signal. But, you know, beyond the headline numbers, how are they planning to improve the nuts and bolts, like transparency and accountability in how public money is managed? Because that's often just as crucial for confidence.
It's a really critical point. And they do address it under public financial management reforms, PFM reforms. Think of PFM as the whole government machinery for handling money. The strategy outlines some pretty significant steps here. One is a gradual shift to program-based budgeting.
Okay. What does that mean practically?
It means shifting focus from just giving departments budgets to funding specific programs with measurable outcomes. So every dollar spent is ideally tied to achieving something specific. It aims for more efficiency and makes it clearer where the money's going and what it's doing. They're also bringing in green budgeting. This means actively considering environmental impacts in budget decisions, trying to align spending with sustainability goals. And also gender budgeting, looking at how spending affects men and women differently, aiming for more inclusive growth. And crucially, technically speaking, they're adopting the GFS 2014 standard for budget classification.
Why does that matter to an investor?
Because it's an international standard. It makes Uzbekistan's government finances directly comparable to other countries. It means you, as an analyst or investor, can use a common framework to assess their performance and track it over time. It's like adopting a universal language for public finance reduces guesswork.
Got it. Okay, this next part feels like where the real opportunities might lie for international capital. We've got the big picture, the fiscal rules, but where is the government actually planning to spend money? Which sectors are prioritized? And importantly, what incentives or specific projects are mentioned to actually attract private and foreign money, especially through things like PPPs, public-private partnerships?
Right, this is where it gets more tangible. The strategy definitely highlights key growth sectors. Social spending is right up there, particularly education and healthcare. Uh-huh. In education, there's a huge plan to create hundreds of thousands of new student places. The document mentions 360,500 in 2026 alone, for example. And there's a clear push to get the private sector involved.
So opportunities in building schools, maybe running them?
Potentially, yes.
Yeah.
Construction, equipment, maybe even operation. In healthcare, they plan to fully roll out a state medical insurance system across all regions from 2026. The idea is that this will incentivize private sector participation, so that could open doors for private hospitals, clinics, specialized medical services.
Makes sense. What about hard infrastructure? Always a big one for investment.
Absolutely. Infrastructure development is another major focus. Huge investments planned in road transport. They mentioned specific new toll roads like Tashkent-Samarkand and Tashkent-Andijan. Plus, they're actively involved in big international railway projects, thinking Uzbekistan, Kyrgyzstan, China, and Uzbekistan, Afghanistan, Pakistan. That really leans into their position as a potential regional hub.
Enhancing connectivity.
Exactly. And new international airports are planned for Tashkent, Bukhara, and Urgench. These are all signals for large-scale opportunities in construction, engineering, logistics, operations, the whole value chain.
That infrastructure push definitely points towards a long-term vision. What about the green transition, and what's the plan for state-owned enterprises, the SOEs?
Green energy is flagged as critical, and the plans are, frankly, very ambitious. They're aiming to add 11.7 gigawatts of new generation capacity by 2028.
Wow, 11.7 gigawatts.
It's a mix. 2 gigawatts from solar, 5.4 gigawatts from wind, and 3.7 gigawatts from modern thermal plants, specifically under PPPs. The goal is to reach over 108 billion kilowatt hours of electricity production. This is a very clear, aggressive move towards renewables, offering really substantial opportunities for developers, tech providers, financiers in the green space.
And the SOEs, often a tricky area in emerging markets.
Right. The document states that privatization of SOEs will be accelerated. Inefficient ones will be reviewed for potential sale. They also plan to gradually reduce the state's dominance in certain markets by getting rid of exclusive rights and benefits, partly to align with WTO requirements. It signals market liberalization.
Trying to level the playing field.
That seems to be the intention. And state enterprises and banks are being pushed to raise funds internationally without state guarantees. They're being encouraged to get international credit ratings. This forces them towards market discipline, makes them more independent, and potentially more transparent and viable for investors looking at partnerships or acquisitions down the line.
So how are they specifically trying to attract private capital, especially foreign capital, through these PPPs?
Well, the strategy prioritizes infrastructure projects, particularly out in the regions, for PPPs. It mentions building and equipping at least 100 preschool facilities annually from 2026 via PPPs. Also constructing 130 general education schools, adding 86,000 student places with support from IFIs like the World Bank or ADB.
So leveraging international finance as well.
Yes. And PPP projects and utilities like heating, water supply, sewage services are also being accelerated. There's even mention of expanding green mortgage loans for homes built to sustainable standards. And interestingly, specific support for venture funds and crowdfunding for startups, targeting at least 200 startup projects by the end of 2026. So fostering innovation, too.
That's a remarkably detailed picture of where they see investment flowing. Okay, let's shift gears slightly to the business environment itself. What's the outlook for taxes and regulations over the next 3 years? It sounds like they're trying to make things easier, but are there any potential catches for businesses or investors in the tax plans?
On tax policy, the stated aim is creating an equal competitive environment. That usually implies fairness and predictability. This involves simplifying things for small businesses and the self-employed, optimizing profit tax rates, though optimizing can sometimes mean adjustments up or down, we'd need more detail there. But importantly, they explicitly mentioned reviewing and abolishing ineffective tax and customs benefits. This suggests a move away from arbitrary incentives towards a more streamlined, maybe broader-based system.
Cleaning up the system, perhaps?
Possibly. A really notable development is the plan to introduce green taxation mechanisms, using tax to encourage environmental protection. They're also working on streamlining VAT refunds, always a pain point for businesses, and unifying excise taxes on things like alcohol between local and imported goods, aligning with WTO norms.
And digitalization?
Yes. Digitalization is a big theme in tax administration, aiming for more non-cash payments, better tracking of goods, which should simplify compliance for legitimate businesses, and hopefully reduce the shadow economy.
And the wider regulatory picture, beyond tax.
The outlook there seems generally positive, aimed at fostering private business. They talk about simplified admin procedures for SMEs, a moratorium on new obligations being imposed on them.
A pause on new rules, that's significant.
It could be, yeah. And a simplified process for closing a business down voluntarily, which can be surprisingly difficult sometimes. Licensing and permits are said to be streamlined through more digitalization, faster, easier setup and operation is the goal. They also mention support for SME expansion and better adherence to production standards, both national and international. Plus, a focus on entrepreneurship, education, business skills, digital literacy, especially for youth and women, and fostering industrial clusters using local materials, building those local supply chains.
Okay, it all sounds very positive, very structured on paper, but let's be realistic, no strategy unfolds perfectly. What potential pitfalls or risks does the document itself identify? And crucially, what does it say about how they plan to mitigate these risks? This really gets to the heart of how robust these plans might be against, well, reality.
That's the vital question, isn't it? And to its credit, the strategy is actually quite upfront about potential risks. It identifies several fiscal, economic, and external challenges.
Okay, what are the big ones?
Under fiscal risks, a key one is the budget deficit exceeding that 3% GDP ceiling we talked about.
Right, if spending pressures mount or revenues fall short.
Exactly. The mitigation plan involves several things. Sticking rigidly to those fiscal rules, intensifying the fight against the shadow economy to get more revenue and critically reviewing and cutting those ineffective tax breaks. Optimizing spending, cutting subsidies where possible, and reducing state loans to enterprises. So a mix of revenue and spending measures.
What else on the fiscal side?
Public debt, going over the 50% of GDP limit, is also flagged. Mitigation there involves sticking to the ceiling, diversifying the debt portfolio, not relying too much on one type of debt or creditor managing currency risk, and importantly, increasing the share of government bonds issued in their own currency, the SOM. That helps reduce vulnerability to exchange rate swings. It shows proactive risk management.
Okay, moving beyond fiscal, what about broader economic risks?
They explicitly acknowledge the ongoing global economic uncertainty and geopolitical tensions. Can't ignore those. The mitigation strategy focuses on strengthening internal growth drivers. So, boosting household consumption, driving investment through those PPPs we discussed, expanding service exports, trying to be less reliant on just global demand.
Makes sense. What else?
They also note the risk of unpredictable trade policies from other countries. The response there is aligning their own tax and customs policies with WTO requirements, aiming for stability and predictability in their own trade regime. Global inflation is another one. Mitigation involves their own targeted inflation management, aiming for that 5%, but also ensuring that wages, pensions, benefits rise faster than inflation.
To maintain social stability as well as economic.
Precisely. Maintaining purchasing power is key to preventing social unrest, which obviously has economic knock-on effects.
And finally, you mentioned risks related to the state enterprises and banks.
Yes. Their financial health is identified as a potential vulnerability. The plan involves ongoing financial sanitation efforts, basically, cleaning up their balance sheets, dealing with bad debts, making them more financially sound. This goes hand in hand with reducing state-guaranteed loans to them and pushing them towards market-based funding, getting those international credit ratings we mentioned. It's all about reducing their drag on public finances and making them stand on their own feet.
That was a really thorough walkthrough of the strategy, including the risks they themselves see. It's clear there's a lot of detail in this roadmap. So let's try and synthesize this. Pulling it all together, what's the bottom line? What's the concluding analyst note for an investor looking at Uzbekistan based only on this document?
Well, based purely on this fiscal strategy for 2026-2028, the document presents a picture of a government with a, I'd say, clear, disciplined, and definitely forward-looking economic plan. The commitment to those strict fiscal rules, the ambitious but specific targets for growth and inflation, the transparent approach outlined for managing public finances, it all suggests a credible environment for international investors. The detailed plans for PFM reforms, tax adjustments, speeding up privatization, these point to a very deliberate shift towards more market orientation, more efficiency.
And the risks.
The fact that they not only recognize but also detail various risks, fiscal, macroeconomic, SOE related, and then outline specific mitigation measures for each one, that actually enhances the strategy's credibility, in my view. It suggests a government that's proactively thinking about challenges, not just hoping for the best. And that proactive stance is a strong positive signal for investor confidence.
That's a really strong summary, highlighting both the ambition and the apparent pragmatism laid out here. Okay, before we wrap up, let's leave our listeners with something to chew on. What's a final, maybe provocative thought for them to consider or explore further on their own based on everything we've unpacked today?
Okay, here's something to think about. Given Uzbekistan's clear commitment to becoming an above-average income country and this very detailed fiscal roadmap they've laid out, how might the successful execution of these internal reforms, the fiscal discipline, the PFM changes, the privatization, the sector focus, how might that uniquely position international investors within Uzbekistan to potentially buffer themselves against broader global economic uncertainties, perhaps better than they could in other emerging markets that maybe lack such a clearly articulated and disciplined internal strategy?